Well, we welcome in the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants. He's here with a smile on a Sunday morning. Looks a little tired, I will say that. Ron Wotus, how are you, Will?
I'm doing well, Marty. How are you doing today?
Yeah, pretty good. You know, it's as I said, you know, I do the shows, and really the fans have been terrific calling in and talking about what they think and all that stuff. But from the ball club point of view and your point of view, it almost seems uncanny to lose that many, you know, with the players you have and the pitching you have, to go into a slump like that. And you've been around the game a long time. Is there any explanation?
Well, you know, that's the million-dollar question that we work on every day. You know, how do we get out of this? What's going on? And, you know, we've unturned, looked over under every stone we could and continue to try to figure this thing out. It has been a very difficult time and a bitter pill to swallow when, you know, every day, you know, we just can't seem to match up. If we pitch, we don't hit. We just don't seem to execute, get the big hit, the two out hit when we need it. So it's tough. We haven't seen it before, obviously, and that's where we're at. So it's time for action. You know, tighten your belt strap and keep pushing forward. I mean, you can't look in the past. Today's the day we have to turn this thing around and win a baseball game and start with that, and then good things will happen.
You know, it's funny, and I said it on the show last night, and I never get the feeling. I say, well, the Giants play the Mets today. It's Matt Moore and Montero. They'll never win that game. I honestly tell you this, and maybe in Colorado, you know, maybe my confidence is wavering just a little bit because of the ballpark. But I think just about every time you go out there, I think you can win the game. Honestly, I don't see you say, well, boy, the Giants are putting the team out there. Forget it. They can't win that game.
Well, we expect to win the game.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the names and the personnel that we've had. These guys have won. We have some really good players that, you know, have done it before. So your expectation is, you know, guys are going to start performing to their capability. We're gonna turn this thing around and get on a little bit of a roll. But it starts with one game today. Matt Moore threw a very good ball game his last time out in a tough pitcher's park. So we expect good things from him today, and hopefully today's the day that we get on the win column.
All right, we'll see what happens. All right, let's talk other things other than what's going on around the ball club right now. Young players coming up. You've got Slater up there now playing left field. We got a good look at him. And yesterday, a fellow we've seen in spring training, you've worked with him a lot, the third baseman Ryder Jones. What's your opinion?
Yeah, no, it's great to see Ryder here. He's playing well in AAA. A lot of talent. You saw it last night. He has a bazooka for an arm. Turned a nice double play. You know, for a big guy, he's athletic, moves well, and he has some pop in his bat. And so if you grade him out like the scouts would do, he really has a nice upside. You know, someone that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and he does a good job on defense. They moved him around a little bit in AAA, but his natural position is third base. He's played some first base. He profiles well at first base as well, but they actually stuck him in the outfield. But right now, where we're at with Nunez out, you'll expect to see Ryder at third base every day and give him an opportunity to show what he can do.
I like the way he runs. I mean, he hit a fly ball last night, and he, you know, of course, he's going to bust it. He's a new kid in the big leagues, but this guy's got speed, you know that?
Yeah, he runs good for a big guy,
yeah.
And that's what you want athletes on the field, especially in this ballpark. You know, it's nice to see a guy that has all the tools you're looking for. Power, he runs fine, he's athletic, agile, opposed to a guy that's, you know, one-way player. He could just hit, but he can't field. Or, you know, he has speed, but he struggles with the bat. So we like Ryder, and it'll be good to see him get his feet wet here this week.
Funny story yesterday, of course, he said he's preparing for the game, and he played PlayStation, I guess, right? Allie or Carmen, was it PlayStation or something like that with Arroyo? And Arroyo was DeGrom, and he was the hitter, and that's the way he got ready for DeGrom yesterday. How about that? Did you ever do that, Will?
Well, we didn't have video games like that when I was growing up. Shoot, we had the Walkman. Remember when the Walkman came out? The TV came out. I think that came out when I was in the minor leagues, and he had that portable TV. I remember buying one of those and gave it to the wife, because Lori would be sitting, you know, waiting for me every night an hour and a half after the game, and she'd have something to do to watch the TV. But, you know, back to Ryder, you know, hey, probably nervous, a lot of jitters. I spoke to him. It's a big moment in your career. You only have, you know, one opening day. You finally get to the big leagues. There's a lot of nerves, and that was his way to relax. So I wonder how he did on the video game. I have to ask Arroyo.
I thought it was 0-for-2, and maybe he got one hit off of DeGrom, but he said Arroyo handled DeGrom pretty well.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
well, there you have it.
That was good. A different world. Another thing that came up, it was kind of funny to date how things have changed over the years. You know, Bellinger's going nuts for the Dodgers, 22 homers, 55 RBIs. The guy's just, you know, off the charts here with Aaron Judge, another one in New York. And I guess McCarthy, the pitcher who's pitching today for the Dodgers, said when the Mets were there, Dodgers killed the Mets. I mean, like 15 home runs. I mean, they just demolished the Mets. And someone said to Bellinger, because Jerry Seinfeld is a huge,
right,
huge Mets fan. You know, in fact, we saw Banyan here a couple of years ago.
Right.
You know? It's gold, Jerry. It's gold.
Yeah.
You know, we saw him here a couple of years ago. And Bellinger said, who's Jerry Seinfeld?
Well,
how about that?
Yeah, that's...
Come on.
Well, it's interesting. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan as well. I still watch it whenever I can. Makes you laugh to this day. Doesn't matter how many times you watch the same episode, you still laugh. But that's unusual because Clay Bellinger, obviously, was drafted by the Giants, played for me in the minor leagues. It's kind of bittersweet. You know, I'm real happy for Clay and for Cody. The only problem is he's with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And he's... you know, having this great year of a guy that we're trying to beat. But Clay playing in New York, he won all those, his dad won all those world championships with the Yankees. You would have thought maybe he would have known who Jerry Seinfeld was just because of that connection. But it doesn't surprise me. That show's been long gone.
Come on, but look at that. I mean, it tells you where we're at these days.
Yeah.
You know, who's Jerry Seinfeld? That was a shocker to me. Hey, you had a crazy plane ride back. And I don't mean that it was a crazy ride on the plane, but the Braves have a night game. Whatever could go wrong goes wrong. It's a 12-11 in a score. We have a shot in the ninth inning. I thought you were going to tie it up. You have the rain delay, and then you're flying back. You haven't gone through too many of those. What was that like?
Well, we didn't get on the field one time in Atlanta because of the weather, and we saw this coming. They had that tropical depression down there in the Gulf, and that really affected the weather. We saw it coming. I think we even spoke to the league about, hey, you know, we have this 7:35 game we got to play on the West Coast the next day or next night. You know, how long are they going to make us wait? And, you know, they told us they would try to start the game by 9-ish. That, you know, they didn't want to keep us there 3-4 hours, which we have done in Atlanta. Atlanta has started games past 10 o'clock, you know, but so lo and behold, what happens? Yeah, there is a rain delay, and we start the game at 9, right? If it went a little more rain, maybe we would have got out of there earlier. But it's been that type of year. You know, it seems like whatever can go wrong has go wrong. I don't know if you remember the situation in Cincinnati or spoke about that. This has never happened to me on a baseball team. We have two team buses leaving the ballpark at Cincinnati. And the staff bus was in front. All of a sudden, we pull off the freeway, not off, onto the shoulder. And we stop and then start backing up on the shoulder of the freeway. And we're going, what's going on? Well, behind us, the player's bus... The engine caught fire,
right.
He pulled off and stopped the bus. Next thing we know, all the players are piling on our bus, standing in the aisles, and we continue the airport. So we had that happen to us as well, which never happened to me before in the game.
Well, next year that's different because they can't have the night game when you got to fly three time zones after that. And so next year it's different.
Right. The television contract, I guess, dictates these right. games. And, you know, it was a few years back we spoke to the commissioner when he was making his rounds when he just took over, and that was one of the questions that the players asked him, really the only question. He says, are there any questions? And we were, being a West Coast club and how difficult our travel could be, is, you know, why are we getting picked up for an ESPN 8 o'clock game in New York and then have to play in San Francisco the next day? And he explained that that is one thing that they're trying to change, but you have to wait for the television contracts up before we can make these changes. So hopefully they'll hold true to that. you know, you worry about injury more than anything. I mean, we train for this. Look, I mean, that's part of the job. But you worry about injury. In today's game, we're so concerned about keeping our marquee players on the field and not hurting them. And then you get a situation like that where you get home at 6 in the morning and flew all night. You worry about that next day somebody getting hurt.
Yeah. Boy, speaking of keeping players on the field, Ron Wotus with us. We love Sunday morning with the professor here. Anthony Rizzo had a play at the plate with the catcher from the Padres and caused quite a storm in baseball, whether he deviated out of his path. And, of course, you and I have gone through these rules. We're not sure what the rules are anywhere anymore. But deviated out of his path, and there was the collision, and bang, bang, bang. And everyone got all nuts about that. So what was your take on that one?
Well, there's a lot of hoopla over, really, not too much. Obviously, the league said that they would have called him out for deviating his path if he was safe at home plate. Look, it's a tough place to be. I think that the only thing that he did wrong was deviate a little bit from his path. But when that catcher's standing in front of home plate and he didn't have a big lane to get to home plate, and you're trying to win a baseball game, he slid hard into him. He didn't use his arms. So the little bit of deviation, when you have, you know, maybe 2 inches of the plate to see and you see the catcher standing there with the ball, the rule still says you can slide through him as hard as you want. And I felt he did that. The only problem is he kind of turned to the inside of the plate. And, you know, that's where they got him. As far as the contact, I had no problem with it.
Yeah, it looked like a baseball play, but there's no doubt about it. We're so in tune to this with the Chase Utley business, with the Met guy when he went way out of the baseline, you know, to get him. We're so in tune to anything other than it's a straight shot into the bag that there's something wrong with it. But heck, you know, you talk to baseball, it's a play at the plate, my God. This is what baseball is all about. And what are you supposed to slide into 3 inches of the plate?
Yeah, that's
crazy.
It really is. And, you know, the intent of the rule is fabulous, to try to keep people healthy and not have these collisions. But, you know, the deviation part, it's not always easy when you're coming to home plate. You know, you see the throw coming, you don't know what side of the plate the catcher's going to be on. You're in mid stride. You may go for one side of the plate or the other. He didn't do it in this instance, but it's not as easy for the runner to get to home plate, having to worry about this rule as well as it is for the catcher. Because the catcher, once he gets the ball, if he chooses to stay in front of home plate, he can do that, and he can lower the boom. So, yeah, there was a lot of talk about that, a lot of discussion. But, you know, we're going to see more of that, obviously, in the future, those type of discussions.
Well, Joe Maddon went off on it, then Andy Green went off the other side of it. So Torrey got in the middle of it and said, well, we probably would have called him out for just getting out of that lane, which I think is crazy.
Anyway. Yeah.
Going back to Atlanta a little bit, what did you think of the ballpark? And I'm going to ask you this question. It was asked of me yesterday. I'll get your thought about the ballpark. But what's the fairest ballpark, you think, in the National League? And if you need to look at the list, I could give it to you. But what do you think of the new ballpark in Atlanta, and what's the fairest ballpark, you think, in the league?
Well, I like the ballpark, other than the fact that we weren't able to take advantage of that short right field fence. We did hit quite a few home runs as well, and I know as a hitter, it's going to be a real nice place to hit. Obviously, there was a lot of home runs the ball carries there in that heat. Reminds me a little bit of the old launching pad in Atlanta. You know, just the way the ball carries, there's going to be home runs in that ballpark. But I liked it. I thought they did a nice job with it. The clubhouse was fabulous. John Holland, the club, he designed it. Very good layout. My goodness, they had almost a New York Yankees type kitchen in that place. Right. Huge kitchen and lounge for the players. But the things that you need, the cage, the setup, the logistics in the clubhouse was very good. And the field was good. The playing surface, the atmosphere there, I think, was a big improvement over, Turner Field, the last few years. So I think it's a big upgrade for them. As far as the Ferris Park.
Yeah, where do you think? We sort of went through this list yesterday. Kind of talked about St. Louis, maybe, Pittsburgh, maybe San Diego. But for the National League, just about every yard you look at, there's something going on. Washington's got that jet stream out to right field.
Right.
The Marlins, gigantic park. You know, you got Dodger Stadium, maybe fair, but the ball seems to fly out of there. We're going to talk about the ball in a second, too, but go ahead. What do you think?
Yeah, I think those parks that you have just mentioned are probably right up there at the top of the list. I know the one difference on the East Coast, when the weather heats up, those St. Louis and those places, the ball really does fly. One thing you get in San Diego, you get a consistent temperature weather for the most part. You do have some, you know, fog days where the ball doesn't carry, you know, a heavier area, you're by the ocean. So I would say San Diego's the fairest, but still probably leans to the side of a pitcher's park. But you mentioned St. Louis.
How about Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, yeah, probably so, except you have that real short right field wall there. Yeah. You know, if you pull the ball there, it's a home run. But balancing that out with all the other variables, you do have a big right center field gap. You have left field is deep. So I would say, yeah, I said Pittsburgh's near the top of the list.
Interesting, because all the home runs, all the parks they build now are such small parks. All right, is the ball different? And look, the home runs are up. Strikeouts are up. Everyone's throwing 98. Walks are up. The three true outcomes, that's what's going on in baseball. Yeah, what's your opinion? Do you think the ball is different?
Well, I can't tell anything from grabbing it or throwing it or watch us hit
in batting
practice.
But you watch it hit, though. You watch the way it's
Yeah, hit. You know what? I wouldn't. I couldn't say it is not. I'll say that. I wouldn't say, oh, no, there's absolutely no way that the ball isn't harder or the ball's not going further. Look, Major League Baseball loves offense. We know that. We've seen this before years ago with the baseballs. There were other times where you could physically feel the baseball being harder. It was harder like a rock, and the ball went a lot further. So I can't say that it isn't, and it's very possibly could be.
Well, the home runs are up, but who knows? Maybe it's the type of pitchers, the throw hard, the swing. You know, you're not spraying the ball around as a hitter anymore. You're swinging from your heels as much as you can, taking more walks. I don't know.
There's so many variables, but even if you're making the same baseball, who knows the company that makes it, if there's a change in the machine that's putting it together, wrapping it. I mean, you just never know. And I don't think anybody will ever know about
it. Well, it's kind of the mystery of the game. And, you know, years ago, they would tell you. You know, in 1930, they said, look, we want more offense. They told you, we want more offense. We're changing the ball. And the league hit 300.
Right.
You know, but in the 30s, they wanted more offense because of the Depression, and they wanted people to get excited and go to the ballpark, and that's how the All-Star game came about. They would tell you what was going on.
Right. Well, to your point about the other variables, you know, the one thing is obvious to me in general, and I don't know what the statistics say about this, but the arms, the velocity seems to be way up for the pitchers. The other side of the equation, you know, you would think there's obviously more strikeouts because of that, but when you do make solid contact, I would think that that would help in the ball going. The ballparks, as you said, makes a huge difference. But the other side of it is, I think strength and conditioning today is at the top of everybody's list. I mean, shoot, when I was with the Pirates coming up, they didn't even want you lifting a weight because, you know, they always got their players from Latin America. Roberto Clemente was their you know, big star, and they said he never lifted weights, and we don't want you to get muscle bound. On the other side, you had the A's. You know, they started pumping the iron earlier and kind of went that route. But strength and conditioning, the strength of the player, I'm sure continues to get better and better and stronger because of the way they train and the way they approach the game. So who knows? But there are a lot of variables in place.
All right, Ron Wode is with us. Let's go back to Atlanta for a second. Go to school here on this Sunday morning with the professor. Santana at second made an interesting, tried to make a play, and it helped you in the ninth inning because it prolonged that ninth inning. And for the ball, bases loaded, I think, at that point. Ball hit to Santana, just wanted to get an out, but he started fooling around with the runner coming towards him and ended up not getting anybody because Adams didn't throw back to second. So my question to you is this. If I'm the second baseman and I've got the runner in front of me, why don't I just run right at the runner? What am I fooling around with? Just go right at him. And where's he going to go if he goes back to the – will you explain it? What's he supposed to do?
Yeah, well – well, he did exactly what you were saying. You know, the bases were loaded, I think, at the time, or first and second.
You had a force out.
That play comes up a lot, to where the ball's hit to the second baseman, and you're feeling it with the runner coming your way.
Right.
And, you know, you have an option. If the ball's hit firm, you can throw to short and turn the double play the conventional way. But if it's hit slower, and it usually is when you have a chance to tag the runner because you're at double play depth, you're coming up, you catch the ball, you're taught to run at the runner and tag him and throw to first. Well, the runner did a good job, and I can't remember who our runner was. I think it might have been Belt, too. My Belt. He stopped, and you retreat. Where Santana made his mistake was, I mean, the scoreboard, they had a big lead, as you said. They needed an out, and he tried to do too much. So once you run at that runner hard and he retreats, now you need to get the out at first. He just waited too long. He kept going at Belt, and what he should have done is once he retreated, he should have thrown the first and got the out at first, and they still would have probably gotten Belt at second because where he was on the field. So it's a little bit of an instinct play. It doesn't come up a lot, but the scoreboard and the situation for the Braves there tells you he needs to get an out, and he tried to do too much and get the double play with the tag and throw to first. Once you can't tag that guy quickly, abort that runner, throw to first, and you'll probably get him on the return throw to second base.
Or you just keep chasing Belt. I mean, if you're close enough, then you just keep chasing him. And so you chase him back to first base. You can't have two people on the bag.
Well,
somebody's got to be out, so why let him out of the pickle?
Well, because he tried to do too much, as we're saying. He tried to get the double play.
Yeah.
But to your point, he could have got one out either way.
Yeah.
Typically, you would throw the ball to first and you would have him still hung up because he's only halfway to second.
Right.
But you're right. He could have done that as well. He could have just chose to say, I'm just going to get this one out and be done with it.
All right. Well, interesting. And that was, of course, part of this crazy night in Atlanta. And then, of course, just to follow up with our professor here, then the play at second has got to be a tag play because the force is off once you get the out at first base.
Correct. That's yeah, no happen. Doubt. And you see that play quite often in the big leagues. You probably see 10 or 15 of them a year. It doesn't come up all that much for a player. And a lot of times in that play, because it doesn't come up very often, the instinct of the player comes in the play, you know, just having a whole feel for making that play.
All right, Ron Wotus with us. The last thought on that little run play. You know, when I played ball, whatever level I played at, as an amateur, of course. But if a ball was hit in front of me and I could jump over the ball, I always tried to do that. I very rarely see that in the major leagues anymore. Don't people do that? You know, that you're running towards second and here comes the ball. Don't you run and try to distract the fielder?
Well, it's most of the time it's not as much to distract the fielder. It's where you're at on the field and how the play happens. I mean, when I play just like you, I've jumped over many ground balls because you're in a dead sprint and the ball's coming. And you can't stop midstream. You have to jump over the ball if it's low to the ground. At the same token, if it's a bounding ball, you're going to have to stop. But the minute you stop, now the fielder has that play. I'm saying second base because that's where it comes up the most, right? There's a man on first. The ball is hit. And I think where you see the runner stopping most of the time is between first and second. That ball's hit in the hole, and he stops not to get hit. And usually the ball's in the right field, and then he continues to second base. But on a bounding ball, you have to avoid it. The ball's low to the ground, and you're in mid-stride. Maybe you're further along in the baseline. In a dead sprint, you're probably going to have to jump over the ball. You just don't see the guys jumping over the ball as often. They're usually stopping, like you said.
Exactly.
But I think you're supposed to do both.
Right. Yeah. You know, I'm going to watch this. Another thing we got to watch. I want to watch a ground ball. A guy on first, ground ball to second. It's going to be a double play ball or something. You're running, jump over the ball, try to distract the fielder.
Well, we ought to check with the sabermetric community and all the stats that we have today. Maybe they can give us the percentages of jumping over or stopping to let it go. Yeah.
You know, you bring that up as one of the questions I wanted to ask you. You know, Crawford's in a slump, hitting-wise. And, you know, maybe these stats can help a little bit. What's his velocity? You know, he's 4 for 29. Well, is it 4 for 29 hitting the ball at 70 miles an hour, or is he hitting it at 105 miles an hour? And, of course, you see it, but then you look at a body of numbers. Maybe that's the kind of stat that helps you explain how a guy is really going. If he's hitting the ball at 100 miles an hour, maybe he's not you're just sitting in bad luck.
Right, right. Well, he's not himself, that's for sure. I mean, he still leads the team in RBIs and is battling up there. You know, one thing, Cross shows up every single day. And even if he's not hitting the way he wants to hit or he's capable, he wins us games defensively on the field. So he's a tough guy to give a day off to. But that is a marker that we watch, and especially in the minor leagues, you know, well-hit balls. Yeah. I think most managers, even when I was managing in the minor leagues, it wasn't the end result. And that's where stats are misleading. A guy's 0 for 4, he could hit three rockets right at somebody. Yeah. So we would keep track of the well hits. And that's what you look to have a good signal. If is the guy swinging the bat good or not? But, you know, we know his swing. Bam Bam and Deck, they know his swing and the thing he's trying to work on. And you know, he'll start coming out of this because he's that type of player.
Yeah. All right. One last thought before we take our break. Always good to see you here. I appreciate you coming in on Sunday. Allie and Carmen love it, right? You love listening to Woe here on Sunday morning. Patrick asked a question yesterday, and David Ortiz's number was retired, and thank goodness, and he deserves it in Boston, one of the icons of that franchise. And they gave him a little street near the ballpark. I guess maybe they took Yawkey Way and gave him 80 feet of it as Ortiz Way or whatever. So Patrick said they should name a street after a Giant, you know, and he put that out there, and people had all sorts of suggestions. I said, what about Ron Wotus Way? You know, and it would be only a right turn into the street, wherever it is, because you play baseball the right way. How about that? Ron Wotus Way, what do you think?
Well, I appreciate that compliment. I want to thank Patrick right off the bat for coming up with this. I know there's several names they could call it, if my name. Maybe they could call it, you know, 218 Avenue or DP Lane. You know, maybe DP Lane I like better because it doesn't know whether I'm hitting into the double play or turning the double play when I played. But who knows? That's quite an honor, isn't it, for a player to have a street name. You know, Bam Bam has a street named after him.
I didn't know that. Where is that?
In Carousel.
Really?
Yes. And it's Mullins. I don't know if it's Av or Way, but I saw it when I was down there 2 years ago. Went there and helped him with his winter clinic that he has, and all the Carousel players come down there. And, yeah, I have a picture of the sign with me standing there.
Very
as good.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is they could do something on the freeway for you with an emergency phone. And they could have a phone, the Ron Wotus phone, and they could have you next to it, you know, going thumbs up or thumbs down on the, you know. You know, it's become part of your life now.
I know. I run to the phone an awful lot. I never thought that I'd have to get my workout in during the game going back and forth to the phone. But that's how often that a replay situation comes up. And we've talked at length about the replay. We won't get into that, but yeah, I do have the phone to my ear quite often.
All right. Well, I said, you know, one of those phones on the freeway.
Yeah.
It could be the Ron Wotus phone.
Yeah.
And sort of a picture of you and putting your hands next to your head like Bochy does and all that stuff.
Yeah. I don't know who's going to do that, but maybe the people back in Colchester where I grew up.
I like it.
Yeah. Maybe they'll do that.
Do you ever have a day for yourself? Did they ever give you a day anywhere?
No. You know, a couple of friends of mine had to get together. You know, I don't get back to Connecticut as much as I like, and they had to get together, I think, after our first World Series, and they had a little gathering, and it was real nice. A lot of my friends were there and things like that. So that was wonderful, but I don't have an opportunity to get back there as much. Matter of fact, I have one of my high school coaches is coming to the game today, John McKiernan, my old soccer coach, and my other friend Kevin Levine is with him. They're coming out to the ballpark today. Kevin lives in San Diego now. Mac, we call him, lives in Connecticut. And what Mac does, he flies to San Diego, and they get in a car, and then they drive back to Connecticut for a vacation. Now, these guys are, I mean, that's their vacation. They've probably done this 10 or 11 times. And they might be listening. A couple of odd ducks, don't you think? I mean, staying, you know, in the,
absolutely. Now, how old were you when he coached you?
Well, high school soccer. So I played 4 years. Yeah, he'll be here today. I'll try to send them in here. But the most interesting thing about their vacation when they go cross country is, you know, you think you'd go to the Grand Canyon or, yeah, you know, see some real major sights. They'll come catch a baseball game. They've seen me at different cities around the country. But then they do the oddball stuff, like they'll go see the biggest ball of yarn.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it was in Arkansas somewhere, and this is their vacation.
The Paul Bunyan statue.
Yeah,
in Minnesota.
God bless them.
All right, very good. Thank God that they could do it. Very good. I'm going to meet them though. Get the scouting report on Ron Wotus in high school. We know what you look like with the hair. But
yeah, you saw the pictures. Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. Tim Kirchin had an interesting article this week. I'll show it to you over the break. And it's the blueprint for baseball in 20 years. And there's a few of these I want to ask you about, get your reaction. Ron Wode is back with us right after this. All right, Ron Wode is with us. Tim Kirchin, putting the future in focus, the blueprint for baseball in 20 years. And, well, they talk about the pitch clock. Absolutely, they're going to have that where you got to release the ball, get the ball in 20 seconds.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that is coming. There's no doubt about it.
Limit on mound visits by a coach, a player, catcher, infielder. They'll give you 5 timeouts per game. That's what they're going to call them. And any more will result in the ejection of a player or coach. Hitters will not be allowed to step out of the box after a pitch, and the penalty being a strike added to the count.
Yeah, well, the batter's out of the box. They've already tried to institute that, so I see that coming. As far as the limiting the mound visits, you know, that's something we talk about all the time with Major League Baseball when they have our meetings in spring training. You know, that's a point of contention that some people don't like, all these trips to the mound to go over the hitter. So, you know, I could see that happen. It's a little excessive, maybe throwing a guy out of the game. There's got to be another way to deal with that. But, yeah, I could see that happening.
Suspend them.
There you go.
They like to suspend people. Right. Now, this is when we talked about the ties in baseball after the 12th, in the 12th inning, runner on second, 13th inning, runner on third. And if it goes any further than that, they'll have to flip a coin.
Yeah. Well, I hope I'm not around to see that happen. But, you know, the WBC, we saw it in that type of tournament. It worked. It really did work. I could see it happen. And, yeah, the way things are moving. Obviously, Tim's intelligent and, you know, he's been following the game a long time. And a lot of the things he's talking about, they're not out of the realm of possibility. No doubt about it.
There will be a sabermetric coach in uniform on the bench. How about that?
I think
Bill James will be in a uniform.
I think that's a reach with the computers and the communication you have. You know, they can just call down on the phone. I don't know if there'll be a Sabermetrics coach on the bench, but never know.
Do you have a laptop that you can use on the bench now? I know that you have the big book. I remember Mike Socha used to turn the pages in the book. Is it now computerized?
They did. Major League Baseball a couple of years ago. It's not your own personal computer. They're iPads, and all the information that you have on your scouting reports on paper, you now put them onto the iPad. You can't have access to the internet, but that makes it a little bit easier. You don't have to carry these big binders and flip through it. It's all on an iPad. The other thing that's added to that is they're letting you put video, not of the current game, but you can put video on that iPad as well. So not only the hitters, when they come to home plate, new pitcher comes in, they go to the reports see what he has. If they want, they can hit a button and watch the guy throw right there on the bench.
Wow, do you use that?
Well, I don't know if Bam Bam how much he uses it. I've seen it on before. I've seen him looking at it. I use it for the defense sometimes. A pitcher will come in. You know, Melanson, I'm always watching our closer late in the game, one-run game. I'll go to the video, him against their hitters, to try to get a better idea what the swing's going to look like and how, what adjustments we should make.
Very good. I didn't know that. Very good. Boy, I learned something all the time. They are going to have the pitcher wear sort of that protective helmet because of the balls being whacked back to the mound so hard.
Yeah, probably so.
And then maybe one or two more of these. The home plate umpire will stand behind the pitcher to call balls and strikes.
Well, I don't know about that one. I think there's a better chance there'll be some sort of electronic. I don't know why the umpire would go behind home plate for his health reasons. I don't know. We do that in the spring, though, right? We have umpires. I mean, there's only one umpire. He's behind the pitcher calling the plays. Or when we don't have an umpire, you have one of your players go out there, and he's the umpire standing behind the pitcher.
You know, in the old days, and, you know, not that long ago, but former players became umpires. I remember there's a pitcher, Bill Kunkel. I don't know if you remember that name. Pitched for the A's and the Yankees. He became an umpire. The great Lon Warnke of the Cubs became an umpire. And did you ever hear the name Jocko Conlon?
No.
Jocko Conlon was really, he wore a bow tie. And he was when Leo DeRocher got into a big shouting match with him, and they started kicking each other. But Jocko had shin guards on, and Leo didn't. So Jocko, of course, got the best of him. But as Cepeda said the other day, that after the seventh inning, anything close was a strike. Anything close to the plate was an out.
Sure.
Because Jocko wanted to go eat. But the point is, he was an outfielder for the White Sox.
Yeah.
And they had one of those doubleheaders where the umpires didn't show up or something happened. And they said, we need an umpire. They took him to be the umpire. He was so good at it, he had a long... He's a Hall of Fame umpire, Jocko Conlon.
Unbelievable. This knowledge that you have about these things just amazes me every time, Marty. I would have never thought about that in a million years that happened.
That's a baseball story. But I guess the point is, can you see a former player being an umpire when they're...
Yeah, but...
Give me a player in the Giants who would be a good umpire.
A good umpire.
Even a coach. Who would be a good umpire?
Well, we're all pretty good right now. We're always questioning the calls. We think we know. That's a tough one off the top of my head.
How about Mark Gardner? He seems like a reasonable man.
He's a reasonable man. Yeah, right? There you go. Mark Gardner. Yeah, level-headed. Right? Doesn't get too high, too low.
Knows the
always
strike
in
zone.
Control. No, ex-pitcher, knows the strike zone. I could see him behind the plate.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Maybe you want to mention that to him?
I will mention that to him today and see if he's interested.
All right. Hey, great to have you here as always. We have more topics that we didn't even get to, so we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And get a win. You know, it's uncanny. As the way we started this thing, it's like a blind squirrel sometimes gets an acorn. You know, it's all got to come together at some point, don't you? That's the way baseball works.
Yeah, no. We got to get on the winning track. Today's a good day to start. And, you know, it's amazing. This game, it never stops amazing you, you know, whether you're winning or losing, things that can happen in the game. But, no, we got to buckle down and stay in the moment here and try to win today's game.
All right, well, thanks so much. Have a
you
good
got
day.
It, Marty.
All right, that's Ron Wotus, the bench coach. Maybe an umpire in his future. He didn't say that. He didn't want to be an umpire. I have more coming up in the Sports Leader.